Does something interfere with your happiness? Is something preventing you from achieving your goals? I know most of us have that in our lives, so I'm here to tell you that I am very proud that BetterHelp is one of my sponsors. BetterHelp will assess your needs and match you with your own licensed professional therapist. This is not a crisis line. It's not self-help. It is professional counseling done securely online. I want you to start living a happier life today. And as a listener, you'll get 10% off your first month by visiting BetterHelp at betterhelp.com/Bob. Join over 1 million people who have taken charge of their mental health. Thank you and be well.
Here's to getting back together, to planned lunches and unplanned cookouts, to grandma's recipes and smells that take us back, to passing down plates and traditions. Here's to warm embraces and familiar faces, to your best friends becoming best friends, to scheming, dreaming, and food still steaming. Here's to laughter and love, to growing closer than ever, for all of life's get-togethers. Chinette, here's to us.
Hey, everybody, I'm Amy.
And I'm her husband, Chris. Every week on True Crime Recaps, we're bringing you twice the crime in half the time.
How would you like to hear about three terrifying Amish murderers in less time than it takes to stalk your ex on social media?
Here's how it works. We scour the internet for all the bizarre details to bring you some really out there recaps about the worst of the worst. What could be better?
Our favorite recap so far has got to be the one about Ed Kemper. I swear if you didn't know he killed 10 people, you'd want to have a drink with him.
If you've got less than an hour to get your true crime fix, True Crime Recaps is the show for you. After all, you've got a lot of mysteries to solve.
Follow True Crime Recaps on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts so you never miss a recap. Have we got a story for you? We'll see you there.
Hey, everybody. It is Bob. It's Bob Sagetts here for you, the podcast that bears my name. You want to go to a podcast that everybody knows your name because your name's on the podcast. This is an episode that I think you're going to enjoy. It's my friend for decades. It's Scott Bakula. I believe was just a reference on Ted Lasso. I'm not sure, but it does say believe behind me because a lot of us got that sign, which we all believe in. And it's also a favorite show of Scott Bakula, who's going to tell us about that. And he has such an interesting career. I met him when I was a guest star on Quantum Leap, which is how a lot of you were introduced to him that are of the older variety than the youngins listening, who I also thank you for listening to this podcast. And he's done so many shows, most recently 7 years, 2014 to 2021, on NCIS New Orleans. He was Dwayne Pride, and he's going to talk about that. He's going to tell us about a show that he did that I personally loved. He did it with Ray Romano called Men of a Certain Age, and that was for a couple years, between 2009 and 2011. Find out why it took 3 years to shoot a show that was on for 2 years. And he was Captain John Archer on Star Trek Enterprise from 2001 to 2005. Obviously, the man has trouble getting a job. He's, if you go online and look at his IMDb, you'll have wasted a lot of paper, so don't print it. I did, and I've got a freaking book here. And it's all just the stuff he's done. I mean, he is, without a doubt, there he is. He's at the forefront of a lot of successful shows, and he's just a really good man and so talented and such a good actor, but he's a really good person. So please welcome, if you would. Oh, wait, I have to tell you, I hate doing business, but it's part of doing business. We want you to rate, review, and subscribe. Subscribe, and download it. You can join the YouTube page, which is youtube.com/Bob Sagetts. And that's me. It's so weird saying your name in a sentence. I don't know. It's not narcissism. It's the damn name of the site. But anyway, you'll want to do that if you want to keep going. I'm never stopping doing these. I'm sorry. It's a veiled threat, but it's also something I love doing. And I love being able to talk to my friend right now. Here comes Scott Bakula.
I like that you have Believe behind you on your desk, just like Ted Lasso.
Yeah, I got to believe in something. I finally found a show that was inspired me so much, you know, last year. I'm sure you as well.
Love it.
Yeah, because
can't wait for every. Because why?
It's positive. I mean, and it teaches you to open up, you know.
Yeah. No, I just think. Do you know him? Is he a buddy of yours?
I know him. He's an acquaintance. But yeah. I had him on the podcast, and he is the real deal. He's just a very special person.
Cool. I'm impressed with the whole thing. I know. I mean, that the big guy playing Beard is on his writing, is one of his writing partner, and the guy playing Trent, Roy. Is was another writer that said I could, you know, that they let audition. You know, I just think it's really fun, yeah. And the cast is great.
They're amazing, and the writing is great. And Roy, every time they've got him down to caveman speak, you know, now he's grunting. It's just really, and Jason is, you know, when you see someone, I'm not going to give away the second season, but when you see someone
you've seen the whole second season already.
No, I've just seen the six that are up, I think.
Yeah, I've seen them all. I'm right there with you.
No, yeah, I've seen four more than you have. No, I haven't. I've seen your next series already.
Wait, Bob, I got a call. I got to go. You're more special than me. I know you are, but that's okay. No,
that is so untrue. You got to get a bigger thermos.
I got two.
See? You're a guy with two. How big a truck are you driving?
I'm down. They're smaller and smaller. I got a BMW i3 electric that
That's
I love,
great.
and then I have an X5, which is a plug-in also. So I'm basically not using any gas unless it's an emergency. So
what if it's a spicy meal? Hey, so God, I miss you because that reaction. It takes a real friend to know that I mean well.
To know what you're saying at all, really. I mean, that's years of practice and tolerance, right?
Yes, actually, that's my museum, but the Museum of Practice and Tolerance.
You don't want to go there.
No, I shouldn't have. I'm going to cancel myself. Okay, I'm back.
All right, you're back.
So how the hell are you? I miss you back. So bad. It's been like... And then the world, you know, even if I wanted to regroup, was so weird this past, I don't know if you heard, but the world's been a little weird.
Huh?
Nah, I don't know.
I've been in New Orleans and nothing's weird in New Orleans.
No, how bad is that affecting you emotionally right now? Because I know you love it there.
I do. I got a lot of buddies there. But they all wrote, you know, the people that wrote it out, they're okay. They've lost stuff. That, you know, one guy lost his roof, you know, but everybody made it through in terms of their health just fine. So that's I'm very happy about that. But, you know, when you hear, think about, they say, oh, yeah, your house is fine. Everything's good. 30 to 60 days for electricity. You just get in a car, right? And you drive away if you're fortunate enough to have money for gas in a car that works.
And then there's also... And there's stagnant water in the basement that can be incredibly dangerous for you.
Yeah, there's already so much mold in New Orleans and the vicinity, from all these things that happen anyway. Or, you know, you drive by houses sometimes in neighborhoods and you see like 2 feet of black around the bottom of the built, you know, the whole house.
Right.
You know that that's black mold and they can't leave it. They can't sell it. They're just going to live in it. And
you can't gut it. It becomes a teardown. You know, if you lived out here, you'd want to gut your walls and stuff. But
we're
spoiled when there's no fire. We're spoiled.
Yeah. When there's no fire and there's no earthquake. And
yeah. Well, the earthquake doesn't seem to be bad, but here we're going to have one now.
Just be quiet.
Right now.
Shut up. Just, how about this? Shut up. I used to have a buddy who lived in New York and I was never in town for any earthquakes. So he would always call me and say, I'm coming to LA next week. You're going to be in town. And if I was leaving, he wouldn't come to LA. And I'm not kidding. I can wait. I'll wait till you. When are you going to be back?
I was. So he wants you to basically, if anything happens, he wants you to save his life.
No, he wants me to, if he wants to know that there's not going to be an earthquake, because
right.
there isn't a big problem.
Right. Well, you're also kind of a hero thing. You are a hero. Since when I first met you, you kind of did, actually, you wouldn't know, but I did it with my family and people I care about to try to help everybody. But you're exponentially that, I think. I was so impressed when I first met you. We were kids, I think. You're 1 year older than me, I believe. You're 54.
Yes, that's exactly right. I always thought you were 6 years younger than me. So
mentally.
No, 6 years. Age 6 years. I don't even know what you're talking about, this hero run that you're on.
Just because
I had a family and
and
I had children and I was and we were both navigating life, trying to navigate work, insanity and raise a family. Is that what you're meaning? Or what did I
am.
I don't remember doing anything heroic.
I have one. I have a story loaded up for you.
I guess. Is it about me or are we back to today?
It's about you. It's a little show called Quantum Leap.
A little show.
That's the picture you want to see.
That's the one I want to see on paper.
Right. And then there's this, which
it just gets better.
It does. There's actually many, many, many incarnations.
What stock is that paper that you printed it on?
The onion paper. It's as thinnest possible. It's wrapping paper. I cut it up. I'm going to tell you how you were a hero. And I experienced it. And it was on that little show, Quantum Leap. I was fortunate enough, thanks to a sweet man, Don Belisario, who invented the show. And I think, did he write this for you? Was that the idea?
No. No, I auditioned just like all the other working bums that had to audition.
And before that, well, I'll finish the hero story. We were doing a thing. We were Martin and Lewis, representing Martin and Lewis, and you leapt in the Dean Martin type body, and I was there as a faux Jerry Lewis foil, and the lovely Amy Yazbek was...
Amy Yazbek.
She wants her Yazbek. She is an angel, and she... was my love interest, but not really, because she liked you. And but the main thing that was interesting about it was we were friends, and I think you suggested me for it. So we're at the Ambassador Hotel, and which is now no longer. That is gone. And we were shooting in the kitchen. And the kitchen is where Robert F. Kennedy was assassinated.
Correct.
There's the ding. And so that's just good. That's a sign.
Yeah.
Okay, there was a fight scene with the guy, Diamond was the stunt leader?
Diamond Farnsworth, yes.
Diamond Farnsworth. And you guys were punching each other, not you and he, but you and a stunt gentleman were punching each other, and you were supposed to punch him, and he was going to land on lettuce, on a bunch of greens on the table behind him. And you just yelled, cut. And this is the hero moment. It's also just being a professional and wanting to take care of everyone as your top of the show, and it all trickles down. And there was a knife sticking straight up out of the lettuce. And you just picked it up and showed it to everyone. And then Diamond just went, okay, everybody. He brought his team in to talk to them about how did that happen, who would put that there, talk to props. But you were the guy, I looked at that and went, on that set, you were a first responder.
Well, let's not, yes, I, it's funny, I don't remember that.
Right.
Yeah, I don't really remember, I remember the kitchen, I remember the episode very well, but I don't remember that moment.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of horrified by how that could have possibly happened. Right. I must have been fighting with an actor and not a stunt guy. Because if it had been a stunt guy, I would have kept fighting. Because the knives don't hurt those guys.
No, it just goes right in their back and they pull it out and it just seals right up.
Oh yeah. Well, they got all the scars there anyway, so you can just they find usually just use the same ones. But that's a terrible story.
Well, it's not, because you saved the day. It's a wonderful ending. And then you leapt into another episode because you were done with that one.
Yeah, and I yes, and I and then we fired all the stunt people. No, Diamond is still working on. He's still the stunt coordinator on NCIS. so he's just stayed, he stayed with Don, and actually that, just talking about him for a second, he kept me alive and never got hurt in 4.5 years of doing stupid stuff day, you know, week in and week out, riding horses, flying on trapezes, you know, being on motorcycles, doing stuff that, you know, I just never dreamed that I would ever do. And he kept me and the guys that he hired that I had to fight with, and that, you know, the martial arts guys and the boxing guys who were beating the crap out of me and all that stuff. He, all those guys took really good care of me for 4.5 years. So that story though is not a good one.
but it's who you are instinctively. It was just, that's why you don't remember it. You're so in the moment that you just took care of stuff, you know?
Yeah, I guess I'm glad I saw it. That's all. That would have been, I don't want to see that headline. You know,
no, that would be a different, I would have not started the podcast with that story. Remember that time you killed a guy?
Oh man.
You found out the knife was in his back and you kept hitting him.
Just, I kept picking up and putting it back on the lettuce. Get a stay on the lettuce. Come on, where's your professionalism? Ah.
Well,
that was so much fun though, Bobby. We got to sing. We had so, if you recall,
I do.
We laughed so hard the entire time. It was unfair to people that weren't in on the joke, but everybody laughed on that show a lot. So
yeah,
and such a treat having you being kind enough to do the show,
and then
Amy too. And it was like a little kind of magic little pot of the three of us just being kooks, and it was
we were hanging out constantly.
Yeah,
it was.
Yeah.
That doesn't happen very often where I'm guesting on something and all of a sudden, but we were friends, so it was different.
We were that. And Amy's that kind of a gal, you know, she just jumped right in with, you know, when you're lucky enough to have people that come on that, you know this, but when you have guests that come on that just embody and they're what they're doing and they're bringing so much to it, it's just, it's such a release, not the right word. It's just such a pleasure.
Right.
And you know, it's like, I'm always like, oh my gosh, you're making the show. This episode is going to be so much better because this person was hired and this person was hired and you guys are killing it. And it's going to, you know, I'm believing everything that's happening because the guest actors are so good, you know, and you were part of that. And it was a ball.
It was a mutual gift because we were playing and
oh yeah.
And I kept, after it was over, go, can he leap back again? And then I kept, my main question to Don was, has he leapt back into the same life? Did you do that you were twice anywhere?
Yes. I leapt back into, I played a character with Down syndrome, Jimmy, and I leapt back into his life, I think, 4 times. Mm. That's the only time.
That character, the version you played of him, you had his impediments, his qualities when you were talking, or did you, or Jimmy suddenly had a different way of presenting himself?
No, that just to reset that everybody that was looking at the character that I, the life that I was in, they heard and saw the same person that was always there. He may have said different things, but in terms of his physical appearance, which also goes to that great, you know, how all of us get in a rut where we expect somebody to behave the same way that they behaved the day before. Mm-hmm. And even if somebody's trying to change or says something different, we don't hear it because we've got them slotted in, you know, to this is a kid with Down syndrome. This is the, you know, whatever person. And we oftentimes don't give people a chance to change. So that also played into this idea that, you know, here's Sam and he's in these different lives and he's, I mean, often the character would say, well, you've never, you know, why are you being so nice to me? Or, you know, you weren't nice to me yesterday. So they would remark on those kinds of things, but they would always see the same physical appearance. So it would always see, if I was a woman in a woman, they saw the woman, they didn't, thank goodness they didn't see me. the audience had the pain and misery of seeing me in the ladies' clothes and with my hairy chest and hairy legs. And And
I made a little scrapbook out of it.
Oh, that's nice.
Anytime you were a woman. Well, you know, I was single for a long time, Scott. A man's got to do what a man's got to do.
You kind of just close your eyes and squint, you know. And right. The clothes were, Jean-Pierre's clothes were fabulous. So if you just kind of squinted, you would think that it was better.
So there's first, I do have a question for you. Have you been in touch with Dean Stockwell?
No, I saw him a couple. I haven't seen him. I haven't really seen him. Let's think about this. I saw him somewhere in the middle of the Maya New Orleans run with NCIS. We actually passed. I went to the airport and saw him because he had a layover. And I saw him and his daughter, and we had a lunch and a great visit. And
he also happy.
Yeah, he did an episode of the show early on season, I think either the tail end of season one or the beginning of season two. Mm-hmm. And so we worked together again. And Jimmy Whitmore Jr. directed the episode, and Jimmy had directed, I don't know, 30 Quantum Leaps. So, the three of us, it was a very emotional day. It was cool.
Yeah. And he's 85. He's 85 now, right?
So yeah, he and Don are the same age, Belisario. So I think they're, I think 85 seems about right.
All right. So you're my friend, but I still had to look at stuff. I've watched your work, of course, as we do, but they're talking.
What's the long face about then?
Well, I always have one. There's a horse that I'm in love with.
I got it. I just like, here comes now.
No. They're talking reboot. So, I mean, everybody wants one. If they're going to reboot, would they do a movie or short season of something, a short order? Or do you think just fans talking?
I think we are definitely living in the reboot era, as you're aware of.
Yeah.
So I think there's a very significant conversations about it right now going on, but I have no, I mean, you know, I don't know what it would be. I don't know who would have it. The rights were a mess for years. I don't even know if they're even sorted out now. So
right.
That's always been the biggest complication. And Don for years was, you know, he and I talk about it periodically, and he would always say, you know, he said, I can't write it without thinking about you and Dean. And I said, just think about me and Dean and write your show and, you know, get it out there. If you have an idea, just write it. I'm sure it'll be great.
Why can't you and Dean do it now?
Dean costs too much money. people ask that question all the time. I don't know. I don't know what that idea would be if we did, you know.
Quantum was on for four or five seasons.
Four and a half. We were that in the olden days, the mid-season replacement show.
Mm-hmm.
So we had a half season of about 9 episodes, and then we had 4 full seasons after that.
Such a great show. It touched a lot of people, you know. And the premise, we were talking about Ted Lasso at the start. It was, you were doing this to somehow help people. That's what you were given by the universe, or however it happened.
Yeah.
And Touched by an Angel is a show that tried to attain that. And then there's a show right now called Manifest. It's 3 years, 4 years old now, but Netflix just picked up the fourth season because NBC canceled it, as they do, after three seasons. So Netflix just bought like 20 episodes. But it's about how people have a calling to affect and help other people.
Yeah.
You've done a lot of stuff like that. I mean, you know, it's so funny. I know all the stuff you've done. I was watching American Beauty when I went, oh, God, Scott was so good in that. You know, Unnecessary Roughness, I was in that theater. You know, we did the celebrity baseball thing. You let me play my little bad walk and run. Turf toe or whatever happened to me.
The old turf toe.
Yeah, that's, I get to first base, which is
haunting Saget for years. At turf toe. We had always had to bring in a runner for him.
We found pieces of his nail. We know where he is. The blood is everywhere. Yeah. Which takes me to NCIS because
that's a hell of a segue.
Well, it's blood is everywhere. What else do you do? NCIS, it's snapshots, you looking grim and solving the problem with great actors. So this is, you know, I've been canceled and I've had short runs and you've had as well. You've had series that were 1 year, another order, 1 year. I had a couple series that I loved that were great that were just gone after 1 year because the network, you know, was wrong, frankly. And then they end up firing the president because nasty stuff happened. And, you know the world. But
I do.
You know, this NCIS thing, 2014, you go to work there in a franchise that is like it's a major show. You know, this is it's a franchise that will last forever.
Yeah.
But I know that 2021, it was, I've had a couple surprising cancellations. Was this, I know you're bittersweet about it. I read, so I don't know what. It was your words, but
I'm sure I said it.
Okay, yeah. So what's the deal? Did they? If it's written, it has to be true.
That's right.
But it was an interview. So the question I have is, what the hell happened, and why isn't it back? Because there definitely are fans. It's like there must be annoyed people.
There are annoyed people. It was a surprise. I won't lie to you. The fact that we were back working in the environment that we were all working in last year successfully, safely, mm-hmm. still figured out how to do a show, that was entertaining. I still felt, and also we made a decision, and maybe this is why in the end, but I don't want to belabor all of this, but
I like it because a lot of people, you know, oh, it's canceled. And some people that are out of work actors revel in it. And others go, oh, that sucks. That was a great thing. And 250 people are out of work now. More when you go through the whole thing.
Yeah. Well, we made a commitment. When we were trying back a year ago in May, talking about not knowing what was going to happen. But we thought that if we all thought we would all be, you know, it would be over by the end of the summer, if you recall, mm-hmm. and we'd all be back to work. But even if you just took it in that small segment of life, what happened between January and say September by itself would have been horrific and impactful. And we made a decision to, whatever we went back to do, we were not going to ignore that happened. We were going to embrace it. New Orleans was a city that was hit hard and had deeply affected. We have lots of people on the show, lost family members. There was a lot, people were in it down there. So, you know, and you've got a coroner who's a character on the show. What happens to a coroner during a pandemic? You know, we've been watching what's been happening. So you're going to ignore.
Well, at that point, you've got a 2-for-1 discount.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's called dark humor, everybody. That is not meant to make fun of. It is how I deal with pain. I have to explain that now.
Yes.
It's tragic. You were surrounded by tragedy is what you're saying.
I know how deeply you care about people and how deeply all these things weigh on you. And I know you well enough to know that when you say something like that, that it's the furthest thing from any kind of true feelings, but you're kidding on the square and you are by no means downplaying what's been going on the planet. In a way, it points it up even more. That's the tragedy of it, is that joke of 2-for-1, you know, it was worse than that. And it looks like it's going to be worse again. So I know you well enough to understand.
I love you.
And I just put a black sheet over the thing for just a second. And now you're back. anyway, so we dealt with it. You know, we dealt with it with the pandemic. We dealt with masks. We dealt with people getting sick. We dealt with people being affected by it. We dealt with a city that was affected by it. You know, look, New Orleans, and I cite the Day the Music Died song, but the music went away. And that is the lifeblood of that town. The musicians were shuttered. You couldn't play a horn in public. You couldn't sing in public. There was nothing. It just went dead silent.
Right.
And that town, without the music coming out of doors and windows and, you know, live music, mm-hmm. is not itself. And we just couldn't ignore it. And maybe people, by the time we got near the end of the season, they just thought we'd been too heavy handed or we'd been too real or, you know, the show wasn't entertaining enough. That may have played into it. And I take a responsibility for that because I felt that was a way to be honest and truthful.
You're right. And they're going to regret it because you're right there and you're doing what you're doing. Your character, Dwayne Pride. I love that name, by the way.
That was a good name.
I support Dwayne Pride. Every year it's Dwayne Pride Day.
And you're back. You're
and I'm back.
You're back. He's back. He's on the right side. side of the law. But I'll wrap this up. The other weighing issue was that when it came time for the second option on syndication, what I was told was that it didn't get picked. Nobody picked it up. And so it became a strictly financial deal. So there wasn't a lot to say about that. You know?
Is there any way to do it now? Because like Netflix picks up stuff after the fact, Hulu after the fact, and they go and keep these things alive for another.
The flip side of it is we had 7 years. I'd never been on a show for 7 years.
Right.
I'd never made over 100 episodes of anything. Mm-hmm. And that was like a big landmark for me. And the odds of me doing that, especially in the TV world that we live in now, in terms of how shows are being made, the odds of me being a part of that again are probably slim and none. And so it was a big deal to me. And to get to work that hard, to produce it, to be a part of every, you know, facet of it, you know, once we got going at about season three on, and work with people, it was challenging. It was creatively, ups and down battles, but it was also, you know, I loved it. I got to play music. I got to be around music and in that city with all these people that are survivors. And, you know, I talked to these guys after the Ida hit, you know, and I'm like, yeah, well, you know, we'll be out for, you know, maybe not, I'm not going to have electricity for a month or so, but you know, we'll figure it out. I got a little generator that's working, da, 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 da. We'll be back and up running before you know it. And they will. And they will. They're all working on other shows down there. The city is vibrant with the film industry. I'm sure. I don't know what's going to happen to what's shooting there right now, but they're got a lot of the electricity's back already, much sooner than expected. And people are, you know, filtering back in. But we're not there anymore. But my heart goes out to everybody down there. And I'm always amazed and impressed about how they stick together.
It's quite a beautiful thing how people are that resilient and work together to get through this horrible stuff that keeps happening. You got to work with your beautiful wife, Chelsea Field. Again.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
That was a treat. And that was the the best thing about the pandemic is that I've been flying every weekend for 6 years back and forth to LA. And, because of the protocols, the COVID protocols, that wasn't going to happen in the seventh season. Mm-hmm. And they, the writers called and said, what do you think about, we have an idea to write Chelsea into the show and then she'll be down there with you. And so and I said, that's a fantastic idea. And CBS, it kind of actually started with them, with David Staff.
I love David Staff.
Yeah. That worked out great. Well, you know him from Warner Brothers days.
Yeah. He worked for Full House. He was the head publicist, and what a good man he is.
Yeah. Yeah. He's a great man. And a good father. And he's a, mm-hmm. he's an honest guy, and he kind of tells it like it is. And there are very few guys, as you know, men or women that tell you the truth, you know, and he's straight. He's a straight shooter. And he's got a good heart. He feels too. He does. He's not just like, hey, you canceled. You got to go to get back to the golf course. You know, it hurt him too, to have to cancel us. But anyway, he came up with this idea. The writers said, oh my gosh, this is great. Because not only is it great that she'll be in the show, but you guys can be intimate. We can have somebody on our show that's hugging somebody and kissing somebody because you guys live together, and we can have some semblance of humanity filtered in to the episodes that that you guys are in together, because everything else is 6 feet apart with masks on. So it worked out, and I didn't have to fly. And she was down there, and she set up my living space for the first time in 7 years, and she loved it. And it was great for me to be there. You know, it was just, it really, in all of the darkness and the clouds over that were overhanging all of us last year, having her down there was just the brightest spot for me to be in. And I couldn't have flown last year, so we would have been separated. So it worked out great.
That's unusual and pretty damn one. Another gift. And then,
and
the kids.
She was great on the show. You know, she had a great part.
Yeah, she was great on the show. I watched. And I like that you guys were hooking up, because it's not like thinking, wow, I wonder how his wife would feel seeing him kiss her like that. It's like, you can ask her.
Yeah, she wasn't crazy about it. But anyway, they kept writing it in. More sex for the married people, please.
No one's used to that. And how the kids deal with all of that? They're grown, right?
The kids are grown. With COVID or with their parents?
With you being television? Away during COVID, especially.
Yeah, well, they're all spread out. So we got together twice during the whole year. Mm-hmm. You know, we went to a remote cabin kind of place for Thanksgiving. And then we were home for Christmas here in the house, and we normally have big Christmases and families and all of our extended family in LA.
Yeah, I've always
been to my house
that.
For parties, and you know, and that was just there was none of that. It was just the immediate family, and so I saw him twice throughout the pandemic, and it was really difficult because my daughter was pregnant. And so we couldn't see her, and it was you know, for my problems are nothing compared to problems that other people had.
Right. But the longing of a parent.
Yeah.
And missing your kid. I'm with that with my girls, but we also had two or three times during that year we were able to do it, and they are coming this Thanksgiving here to my house, which is wonderful. And, you know, and they all send their love to you.
Well, I love them dearly, as you know, and I can't, I'd love to see them again sometime at your next big birthday party or something.
We will do that. We will do that, because I don't know when it'll be. I mean, I've just had it, but I'm not retiring at 65.
53? What?
I'm 65, and I was told, people go, I had to fill out my ex-wife, Sherry, wanted me to fill out a form for Medicare.
Yeah.
So I would have it, and I started to fill it out just because she told me to do it. And I was like, I just couldn't do it. I didn't know how to do it. And and the joke is, and it's an actual joke, when do you plan to retire? And I wrote, when I die, on the form. And I haven't heard from them, Scott.
Funny. Yeah. they send me your card and ask me to hold it.
See, you do take care of people.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. When they sent me my card, I said, I know Bob's having some trouble, so he's just not there yet. So why don't you send me his card and I'll hold it for him.
Are you filed for Medicare?
I believe I am. Yeah. I think I have a thing in my wallet.
Is it round and have ribbing on it? By the way, that could be my sponsor. So let's take a quick break. It could be. It's probably for that product. It's either going to be for that or wallets. Here it is. We take a watch how quick this break is. Okay, this is a paid sponsorship brought to you by our wonderful sponsor, BetterHelp. Does something interfere with your happiness? Is something preventing you from achieving your goals? I know most of us have that in our lives, even if we are in denial of it, and a lot of people are suffering. So I'm here to tell you that I am very proud that BetterHelp is one of my sponsors. BetterHelp will assess your needs and match you with your own licensed professional therapist.
Connect in a safe and private environment online. It's so convenient. You can start communicating in under 48 hours. This is not a crisis line. It's not self-help. It is professional counseling done securely online. Send a message to your counselor anytime. You'll get timely and thoughtful responses. Plus, you can schedule weekly video or phone sessions, all without ever having to sit in an uncomfortable waiting room. I want you to start living a happier life today. And as a listener, you'll get 10% off your first month by visiting BetterHelp at betterhelp.com/Bob. Join over 1 million people who have taken charge of their mental health. Again, that's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Bob. Thank you and be well.
I've put a lot of thought into my girlfriend's engagement ring, did all the research, shopped around, and got lots of opinions. At first, I was planning on getting her a lab-created diamond. But after my visit to Shane Company, I changed my mind. I learned that lab-created diamonds have continually dropped in value, whereas natural diamonds have consistently maintained or increased in value over time. And all the diamonds at Shane Company are natural. What's really cool about a natural diamond is that there is no other diamond in the world like it. It's a natural wonder created by the Earth billions of years ago. The oldest and rarest thing you'll ever touch. How romantic is that? And Shane Company's diamonds are conflict-free. They've always sourced their diamonds this way. So for my girlfriend's engagement ring, I chose a 1-carat natural diamond for her center stone. It's spectacular. And it's one of a kind, just like she is.
Now you have a friend in the jewelry business. Shane Company and ShaneCo.com.
Listen closely. I might just know what you're looking for. Maybe it's a little bit more excitement in your life. A jolt to the system. To get the blood pumping again. Just the smallest, tiniest taste. A little something to dilate the pupils. Do allow me to welcome you to the Horror Hill. A little getaway I know about. Place with scenic overlooks and fresh terror on tap would chill even the most discerning connoisseurs of the macabre to the bone. Join me each week to get all of the ghastly, gory, and grotesque stories that I've handpicked from the works of previously published and indie authors by subscribing to Horror Hill on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you prefer to get your horror fix. My name is Jason Hill, and you can take my word for it. Oh, and remember, it's only a story, right?
I know, and we're back.
That's it.
You did it.
You did.
I did it. I brought us back.
Oh, Scott.
Bobby.
It's so interesting. I mean, I guess we've known each other 25 years, something like that.
I think longer than that now. I hate to say it. Maybe 25.
No, because
it's got to be closer to 30 now.
Yeah, you're right.
Maybe.
You're right.
I think you were on season. Do you remember what season you were on? Was it 3 or
Full House? It might have been
not your show, my show. Oh. I can't keep track.
I was on
for 100 years, so I don't.
We were friends for years before that show.
I know.
What year did Quantum start?
No, we started and we went on the air in 89. So, and we went off the air in 93, I guess. So somewhere.
Yeah,
I didn't know you before Quantum. So somewhere in that time. So let's say it was 90. We knew each other from 1990.
We knew each other from the gym.
Yeah, but that's 31 years, 1990.
Oh my God, we're gonna die.
I know. I need to add that up. Let's see, 20 plus 31. That's 51. That's good. We're all right.
I don't feel what people think is our age. I just don't. And I don't think that way. I'm not an ageist. I could talk to a 90-year-old. I could talk to a 10-year-old. They're just not programmed. you know, the younger ones. So don't have all the crap we've been through. Yeah. You know, they haven't seen the pain, or some have these days, but
yeah. Well, you know, you've always been a young spirit, and you maintain that same boyish sense of humor and affability. How's that for a word? Affability.
That's the nice side of me. Others say that I'm like a teenager drawing pictures of penises in books. But
you're a very good artist.
I really am. And I trace them.
And we're off the rails. However,
okay. Here's the show.
That was sending me down. I stopped myself.
Yes, because this is for public consumption. So this would have been something that we would have kept going and perhaps had a cocktail and laughed our asses off. What play that I love that I saw you in at the Globe Theater in San Diego that I drove down and I got to see you and Chelsea?
I think I did Dancing in the Dark down there, but I don't, would that have been it?
That was it.
With Beth Level and.
Mm-hmm. And I loved it. And you were great.
Oh, thanks. That show was, that was an interesting journey. They're all interesting journeys.
Yeah.
But, that was, I had a ball. I mean, except for the Thursday morning, 10 o'clock matinee, you're getting up at 6 and start vocalizing and tap dancing. It just didn't seem correct.
No, but it should not be done. I did a show off Broadway called Privilege, and Paul Weitz wrote it, and it had a great cast, just wonderful people. Oh, God, I want to say all their names, but I won't do it properly. But I know you know, I won't go through it because I'm apologizing to them right now.
Okay.
We did like 10 shows one week, and one was for the hearing impaired. And it was like noon on a Saturday, and the script was copied into the Telestrator for people to read. And I am never really off book, as others might say. I mean, I am sometimes, but I like when I'm in the moment, things happen. And I had my sons I dealt with in the show. And they were laughing at me. The audience laughed at me because the words that were going by below, we didn't have a signer, were not what was coming out of my mouth. So I got these laughs and I went, boy, they found different laughs in this show. But it wasn't the dialogue. It was the fact that I'm not a robot. What can I say?
They were worried for you. So it was nervous laugh. They were like, is he going to find his way back? Do we need to? I thought you were going to tell me that somebody was prompting you from the audience because they all had a script. So they could have said, no, back it up. Back it up.
I think any of them would have been better than me that day if they were on book. But I mean, you're one of the people that everybody loves, which is a testament to the career you've had. And you started kind of like a lot of people that are huge in showbiz. Still, you look at Clooney's first 15 years, a lot of guest starring roles on a lot of shows. You were on a lot of things. You're on Murphy Brown, Designing Women. And I remember when you did a lot of these. I remember 2 and a Half Men, you did that and all these shows. Would you consider yourself to have started struggling when you began, like a lot of people? Did you as a struggle?
Yeah, for sure. But I started in New York. You know, I was a musical theater guy, and you know, I had a lot of good fortune, but I was never. I mean, the life of a New York theater actor, especially a musical theater actor, well, any actor in New York, is. You know, you're scraping, you know, you're trying to do everything. If you can get a day on a soap opera, you're thrilled because you can make one day on the soap opera more than you made in 5 weeks on the road in a bus and truck dinner theater circuit, you know, and if you can get a commercial or a voiceover or any of that stuff, you're just thrilled because the rest of the time you're going to auditions. And then you're working for, you know, very little money to kill yourself for 8 shows a week. And it, that, you know, it continues to this day. It's hard for people to just be a stage actor and make a living as a stage actor only is almost impossible. And especially, you know, I mean, rents weren't what they are now, but still rents were what they were. My first apartment in New York was 150 bucks a month, but I wasn't making any money. So, and it was not very nice. It was, you know, it was a studio. Right. It wasn't a, you know, a palace. It was a studio. The bed that I found on the street that folded out, the couch sofa bed, when you folded it all the way out, you couldn't walk around the bottom of it. You had to walk over the end of it to get down the hallway to the big kitchen that was, you know, 4x4. So, but I think the joy of doing it as a young person is that you don't have any frame of reference.
Right.
You know, it wasn't like I hit it and all of a sudden I was rolling in it. You know, I got enough work to kind of make it by, and here would sometime I would get a commercial would come by or whatever. And so I had enough money. I was eating and I could pay my rent. And
you were eating money?
Yeah. Eating money. And that's how you save it. And,
who needs bitcoins? And
yeah.
Doge.
That's what I thought you were supposed to buy them. That's what the, anyway.
Yeah, you eat them, see if they're chocolate for they're Hanukkah.
You have bits.
Bits of coins.
Bits of coins, yes.
I'll help you follow through with the premise you don't want me to follow through.
I don't really. I wanted to lose it four sentences ago. I couldn't do
okay,
it.
Okay, here's a show you did that I love. I'm doing this because people love you. And you don't stay out of work. Which is like, well, do you have the theory, which a lot of us have, which you finish a run and you go, I'm never going to work again? Or do you have the wherewithal to go, wait a minute, if I get a dry erase board and chart my career, the odds of me not working are fairly slim?
Yeah, I would say, to be honest, I haven't been one of those people that I say I'm never going to work again.
Yeah.
And I think I have had enough good experiences in my decades of in show business to know that the work has kind of always shown up. You know, when I needed it, you know, it would show up. Mm-hmm. When I, you know, and I was thinking, oh, I could be getting in trouble here, you know, then something would show up. So yeah. I haven't been that guy. I don't know if you were or not, if that was your thing, but
I was when I started, cause it would be like a couple of years between gigs.
Yeah.
But then, you know, I'm passionate right now about stand up cause all of a sudden, cause of quarantine and cause of life and COVID, and it made me want to entertain all people, as many as I can. Doesn't matter what they believe in. And comedy can be the universal thing. I'm trying, and I'm on tour, so I'm going to make a special and then probably take a break for a while.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah, it's fun. I'd love you to see it, but you'd have to wear a hazmat suit with my audience. Okay, a show that I loved, Men of a Certain Age. That was 2009 to 2011. It only got two seasons, and I really loved it.
Yeah.
Because it's in my wheelhouse. It's me.
Yeah. I loved it too. And it was an odd experience because the way it fell out calendar wise, it was kind of a mess. It was one of those things where, you know how we think we know everything in the business at our age.
Right.
And they're never going to, there aren't any fast ones left that they can pull on us anymore. And all of a sudden I was, you know, we spent 3 years under contract and made 22 episodes. So,
the back six.
Yeah. And I was like, wait, how, and I, you know, I remember calling my lawyer and saying, how is this happening? How do they have us for all of this time? He said, well, you signed this thing. And then they gave you extra money when they reshot parts of the pilot, they held you over for, you know, da 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 da, and it just trickled on, and because they were having TNT had like a fall lineup and the summer lineup, And the last season we'd made 12, a big order of 12 shows.
Right.
And we were really excited, and it, you know, the show was really kind of really going great. Yeah. And they said, we're going to do 6 in the fall, and then we're going to have you off for 5 months. We're going to make the switch to the summer months. And then we're going to put the other 6 on in the summer. And so all the momentum that we had built up disappeared. Then we started over, and they're like, you know, they're not a lot. We're trying to get the viewers back. And I'm like, you think? And then we finished that. And then they kind of, you know, they had the nerve to say, would you stay? I know your contract's up, but if Andre gets nominated again for an Emmy, we might be able to, you know, keep the show on the air. I don't know what the other guy said, but I said, no. You know, if I don't have another job and Andre gets nominated, or the show gets nominated or something when the Emmys come out, and you guys want to keep doing the show, I'd love to do the show.
Right.
But I'm not going to miss other work right now after 3 years of only. So I was generating 22 paychecks over 3 years. I snuck a couple things in the middle, but basically I was living off 22 paychecks.
At that time, were you able to do what you can do now, which filled those 5 months of non-work with another series? Because that's what we can do now.
You can now. But back then, it was still that transition time of saying, oh, no, you're committed. You know, you could do a guest spot on something, you know, but you couldn't do another. It's not like they do this in England all the time, because that's all they do. They do BBC does 6 episodes of such and such. And then you go do 13 of Broadchurch, and then you pop over there and you do some, you know, I'll do the season of Ted Lasso, and nobody cares. Mm-hmm. But over here, they've got to own you, and they've got to, you know, they want your face to be, you know, exclusive to their network. And so it wasn't that kind of a time. So, but I think I did some other things, during the time. And, but it was just a shame, because I've never been in a series that was canceled, Bob, where everybody at the network was genuinely horrible, horrified, and terribly sad, and over apologetic, and just miserable, because they didn't want to cancel the show. Everybody, all the guys running the network were the men of a certain age. You know, they all loved the show.
Right.
They identified with the show. They never had a show to pair with us. So we never had like a night of us with a, we were lucky enough to follow the closer, but not really the same audiences, you know, it was a little bit of a stretch. But that was the kind of the heartbreak of it, was that, you know, no offense, you know, we know networks have to make money, and the guys in Atlanta who weren't, you know, the guys out here were like, you're not making enough money. We're not making enough ad revenue. So, you know, we're going to let the show go. But holy cow, you still had Ray Romano, and you had Andre Brower, and we had Lisa Gay Hamilton. We had all these great people on the show. Mm-hmm. And it was just getting better and better. And we did some stuff on that show that I still just, you know, the scripts, I can think about the scripts and scenes, and they were really funny and poignant at the same time, you know, and yeah. I love the characters were great. I loved who I got to be. And they gave me a lot of freedom, and it was a nice creative space to be in. As you know, this being an actor and also a comedian, that there's a great freedom when you work with comedy writers and comedians, because they don't want to follow the script. I don't think Ray ever did the scene the same way twice.
Right.
And that's infectious, you know, because then it starts everybody else thinking creatively, and it's just fun.
I was excited you were working together, because Ray's one of the sweetest people ever.
Yeah.
And not the person people would think either. He's so sensitive and.
Oh, gotcha.
And self-effacing.
They would read they would go on the internet after the episodes, he and Mike Royce, and they'd come in the next day and I'm like, what, guys? Well, I was just reading the stuff after the show last night. I said, are you kidding me? Yeah. This one person, they think that I think I smile too much, or, you know, something like that. And I'm like, Ray, you can't do that to yourself. Come on, man. So we laughed about that, but you know, he, he takes it very personally, yeah. You know? And look, when you're up there on stage telling jokes, it can't be more personal, because you live and die, and there's no hiding. It either works or it doesn't work. Sometimes there's you have a half-assed good night, but most of the time it's hit or miss.
Stand up for me now. It's more, there is no failure, because I'm just in a different mindset, and I've been doing it for so long, and I'm all new. And Ray is the same way. He'll go like, I don't think I'll do that great. And then he'll go and crush it. He'll just, because he's so damn good. But it's like people following social media. You get a negative tweet. People don't realize they probably shouldn't engage. Might be smart to block a person that's trying to spew venom onto your life. I've taken notes from people when they've said you shouldn't have said this, or why did you do it that way? And I go, you know what? They have a point. And I have engaged a couple times, but I was already engaged to Kelly, so I decided.
I got it. I understand.
Oh my God. Okay. But people want to know about, I visited you on the Star Trek Enterprise set.
Yes.
I visited you, and I immediately ran into the lovely actress that was the lead. That was the first person I saw, and I was very single. And you said, Bob, come over here. And you just took me away. Because
you're talking about Jolene, I'm sure.
It's all perfect. But guys can be men of a certain age.
You got to finish that. I took you away. What does that mean?
Come over here. Let me show you this. You took me right to the bridge. You just said, hey, who's that? We didn't have anything you could swipe across to date anybody. And let me show you. And so there I was on the bridge, and I became a person again. I got my sanity. But you did that show for 4 years.
Four.
And it was called Enterprise at first.
Yeah, Star Trek. It was Enterprise, then they made it Star Trek : Enterprise.
There was a colon?
I think so. I think there was a Star Trek. I think so.
So, yeah, there was. You're right. And yes. In fact, I have the proof here.
On one of those pages?
Yeah, I have a page.
Wait, let me see it. I want to see it. Is there a colon? No, I hold it down. I don't see the... No, there's no colon. It's just
I got another one.
Maybe I'm wrong.
I'm going to tell you something. You have a very good lower track, because there's a lot of colons in your career.
Yeah, there we go. Maybe I'm colon confused.
Maybe you need fiber.
No, what do you think? What do you think I'm drinking?
Is that some kind of special drink, or is it water?
No, that drink is a green drink. Yes.
Now, my wife's been giving me those, and I get diarrhea.
Yeah, you gotta drink them more.
And then you get more diarrhea, right?
No.
Oh, you get used to it. Your body gets used to it.
Yes.
Nobody told me this.
I know. Well, then maybe she's not her. She has ulterior motives.
Then I had a steak, but that's okay too. Still eating meat and protein, or have you gone full on healthy vegan? Probably
full on vegan.
Not pescatarian. You don't.
I've stopped that. I stopped that.
So now you just eat pure vegetables and minerals.
Plant based. Yeah.
Do you eat like rocks?
If they came from a plant. So there's a rock plant.
Yes. Rock : plant.
Yes. If my blender can blend it up, then I'll eat it.
Yeah. She just blends. She does. When you look for her, you can hear her. So how exciting was that? Your Captain John Archer.
Yeah. What's funny? Yes, go ahead.
Were you when you stepped into this, another, not just a franchise, for some people, a philosophy, and it's true. It was Gene Roddenberry had a wonderful, what would be the word?
Vision. He had a vision of life on this planet and the future.
how humans should treat each other, how all living things should be treated.
It was an enlightened vision, I would say. Certainly.
Right. Did you get to meet him or was he gone already?
He was gone. He was gone. I met his family. I met members of his family. But I never got to meet him personally. Mm-hmm. Sadly, I would have loved to have been able to say that I had met him.
Right.
But he might not have cast me either. So then
I really want to meet you. I'm glad I met you too. You should not be the captain. So how exciting was it when you first did that first shot and sat in the captain's chair?
It was great. I mean, it was kind of an out of body thing, you know, because that's an event, you know. I'm sure every new franchise, of which there have been several, you know, that first scene, first day on the bridge, first rehearsal, first, you know, rolling and you're putting it down for the first time. It's kind of indescribable. It's just something that I'd grown up with. I grew up with Kirk's franchise, the original. And
so you were a fan. You were.
Yes.
Right.
Very much so.
Mm-hmm. Same.
But, you know, people always say, oh, did you ever imagine yourself? I said, no, how I couldn't. I'm from St. Louis. I never dreamed that I would be like, one day I want to be a Star Trek captain. That never occurred to me that would be
my
a good
sofa
thing.
Bed hit the wall in my single apartment.
That's right.
That was my dream, to be on the bridge.
Yeah, my dream was to get rent money. And then you get into the work and you get past that. And I wasn't precious about the bridge. I wasn't precious about the chair. I felt honored to be a part of this franchise and tell the stories that we were able to tell that are so apropos and so from the beginning, from 65 till today, the Star Trek stories have relevance, and we haven't achieved the vision by any shape or form. And of course, our series was colored by 9/11 happening in, oddly enough, in 3 days, the anniversary. But we were shooting then, and that eventually overtook the direction of our show in terms of mirroring that event and casting it into the, you know, painting it with the Star Trek brush. And all of a sudden, we had a huge last two and a half seasons were all basically finding the people that had attacked Earth and chasing them down and where that led us in the universe. So again, life imitating art and art, you know, that was part of that very real part of our franchise. And I think that, I think it holds up. And I think that I think there was merit in doing that. And it was really hard. You know, if you're a writer, you're going to write about what's going on in your world and in your life. And that certainly took over all of our lives for a good amount of time, that event. And still to this day.
We'll always in ours and anyone who is alive and hopefully beyond. Because we can't have that happen again.
No. It was great. I loved it. And it was, you know, the guys being on that lot. I've shot a lot of Paramount, and I love being on that lot. And it's been kind of like we shot Men of a Certain Age there. Mm-hmm. Necessary Roughness, that was a Paramount film. Enterprise, I shot. We shot Gung Ho there. Yeah. I've shot other shows there too. But we had. And, you know, you're the lord of the lot, you know, if you're the Star Trek, you know, you've got the back corner where the Star Trek stages are. And, you know, it was kind of royalty for 4 years. It was cool.
It also was interesting to me that it was UPN. So that was pre-CW.
Yeah.
So that's pretty wild. So they had, I don't know what they were before. They became, so they were bought by Paramount, so they became UPN, right?
No, Carrie McCluggage, who was...
Always liked him.
He was at Universal when I was doing Quantum Leap. Then he and Gary Hart, who was his guy, they got the job, same jobs over at Paramount. And Carrie got it in his, he was a visionary, and he got it in his head that he wanted to create these, the first of these networks that were aligned with a studio, and go out and send and put together a bunch of syndicated markets and put together another television outlet. And we were part of his opening the first season of UPN hitting the air. And we were kind of their big star presentation. You know, we were the big name on the marquee. So, and he and Gary had called, and, you know, I was going to pitch another thing at Paramount because I had moved over there and I had a deal there. And I said, I want to come in and pitch something. And it was a sci-fi thing. and I was with my buddy, Dave Fuller, who wrote Necessary Roughness. And he had this great sci-fi idea. And they kind of said, they let us do the pitch. They were very nice because they were, you know, they great. Oh, that's interesting. And went back, and they called me and they said, look, we're just full disclosure. We're not going to do any other sci-fi stuff right now. We've got one thing in the pipeline, and it's the new Star Trek series. It's 100 years before Kirk, and we want you to be the captain. Now, what they didn't know was that I was already in my head saying, I'm in.
Right.
But I then had to call Dave Fuller up and say, Dave, they don't want our show that you've created and that I've, you know, been a part of creating with you. They offered me, and you know what he said? You got to take it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a friend.
Yeah. And he was like, you got to do it. And I don't know, you know, if he had said, well, let's sell this somewhere else. Let's take it. I don't think there even was Sci-Fi Network back then. It was early.
No, there wasn't. Right.
It was early days. USA was creeping in, but, so we were the first one out of the gate there for the UPN network, which then, aborted and combined with the WB a few years later. And Carrie, left, Paramount, and Gary took over, and it was tumultuous. But and then Les bought Paramount, and then inherited our show, and famously came up to me at one of the parties and said, "You see how bad I want to work with you? I had to buy the whole, you know, Paramount and UPN to work with you again." Cause I'd worked with Les at, I had a deal at Warner Brothers for a long time. So it was all this stuff and people moving and shaking and getting fired. And, but that was the beginning of UPN. And that was whenever that hell was that 2001. I think we,
2001, which is interesting that
came on the air. Yeah.
That Enterprise started in 2001.
Yeah,
which we all, anybody that saw that film, we don't look like that.
Nope.
None of it happened.
No.
Not in this realm.
Nope, not in this realm.
Well, that show also, I know you had 3 years where the budget was like really high, like close to 2 million or over 2 million, something crazy per episode.
I don't know. I think it was probably more than that, but I don't know. I wasn't part of that.
I read like 2.5 or 2, something big. And then the last season, the fourth season, they took it down to 800,000 an episode. Is that accurate? Did I read right? Because everything I read is a lie. But
Did it
feel cheaper? Were the craft services, were the bananas from Costco?
There were no bananas in season 4. I don't have a memory of that, of it getting less. I, I, I know that they were spending money, and you know, we got out of the gate huge. We had huge numbers, and you know, they were just going crazy about it. And we also had the misfortune of being on network television because all the other franchises were syndicated. Mm-hmm. So they went in, they set up their deals. They made deals with all the little stations all around America for 7 years. And they went and made a TV show for 7 years.
Right.
Which we would have done also if we had been syndicated. But because we were on network television and subject to the whims well, whatever the word is.
Well, you're tap dancing.
Yes, for the networks and the advertisers and all of those things. We're lucky we got 4 years, but we didn't get the 7 that everybody else was getting in syndication.
Oh, should have, but what are you going to do?
But it didn't feel like we cheaped it out on the last year or anything like that. The guys didn't have to leave their blue faces on until they came back for the next episode. They were able to take it off at night, and then they go home in their regular skin.
So
but the Vulcans all had to leave their ears on because we can't, they ran out of Vulcan ears. So they left those on.
Did Blue Man Group sue the show?
No.
Or the Smurfs?
Andorians predate the Blue Man Group. So we should have sued Blue Man. We'd probably still be on the air.
Well, maybe if you Blue Man, you would have stayed on the air. That's just one I had to do. So now did you do the conventions, a couple of them, right? You saw people?
I've done them, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Was it Comic-Con or was it its own thing?
Well, I've done both. I did Comic-Con years ago, very early on with Quantum, which was when it was in a basement of a hotel in San Diego. And that was funny. And then now it's just insanity, but I've done the insane version of it also. But yeah, I've done these shows where I've had this link to that world. So they made comics of Quantum Leap. And that was our kind of in to that world before it was sci-fi oriented. And then now their conventions. I don't know what the convention world obviously is taking a huge hit. Yeah. Although I bumped into somebody who was off to do Vegas this summer for the Star Trek, a return to a live convention again. And they were trying to figure it out with the plexiglass.
I did one with, John Stamos and Dave Coulier.
Yeah.
And it was a little, you know, there are a lot of precautionary things and it's difficult for the fans because they want to be in a picture or a selfie. And that's not happening with the, you know, with the salad bar face shield, yeah. Whatever the hell that thing's called.
Yes.
I'm so happy to talk to you.
This is fun, Bobby.
Yeah.
Glad you're doing this. I'm sure you've been having a ball doing it.
I really love it because throughout the whole 2020, I started this thing, did two episodes in studio, didn't know what the show was going to be, and started in 2020, but 2019 is when I came up with the concept, and I was calling people. I was on twice a week, and one of the episodes where I would call people, and then it became something where I felt so bad for the people that I was doing 20 minutes of talking to them, and I'm not Dr. Phil. You know, I was just trying to give them some hope and some positiveness. And everybody just said, you know, I think that a lot of people are doing that where they're calling people or taking people's calls. I would call them. I'd have my cell phone wired into my podcast board and just say, is Joni there? And she goes, who is it? God. I'm so sad. I lost my mother. And I would just be there for her. Yeah. And that's how the title came about.
Wow.
And then the whole thing is to make people, to entertain them and just be there, you know, just to have a real conversation.
Yeah. That's awesome that you've been doing it. Well, I didn't know you were doing it. And when you started, now I'm, you know, I know, I guess you ran out of friends after 2 years.
You were going to be early on.
I'm glad I was still around.
But you weren't available because you were shooting a very popular series for 7 years that should have had the magic 8 or 9, but,
it was magic. It was magic. 7 was very magic. It was.
Yeah. Cool. So was, now I know you and I know you love things that are not ethereal, but have a deep meaning that you can't explain in today's world with just, well, you can't explain it with something taking place with human stories normally either have some comedy slant to them, but most of them don't. And they're dramas, and they're pretty upsetting, a lot of it. And a lot of it's, you know, dealing with the hard issues, and it's hard to skate around it. I mean, that's why it's weird that your show got taken off after tragedy. It's kind of the bravest thing to do would be deal with it head on. And then the producers and writers would have their Emmys. And, you know, I'm just wondering, would a show like A Quantum, would something supernatural that you could be at the helm of and work with some wonderful people be something that would interest you? Or is there something else that you're not talking about because you're obviously on to other development?
Yeah, no, I to be honest, Bob, I mean, we wrapped this thing in April. It's been a roller coaster since then. We've had a lot of ups and downs. Happily, I'm a grandfather, so that's been the big up.
Right. Congrats.
But we've lost, you know, thank you. But we've had some, you know, Chelsea's lost some people in her family and stuff. Not COVID related, but kind of, but not really, but specifically, but people affected. She lost her mom and things like that.
I loved her mom. I was going to ask and I was afraid. I'm so sorry.
So, it's just been,
you've been dealing with life.
Yeah. And then the work thing, you know, I always thought that I'd reach a point where I would just kind of go back to the theater, and that's really my first love. And so, you know, ironically, when I finished the show, there was no theater going on. So it wasn't like, oh, you know, I could have started I didn't know the show was going to get canceled. But last November, I said, okay, well, the show's going to be over in April. Let's start looking for a theater thing that I can do in London, or I can do in, you know, and I did, I got to go to London, you know, several years ago to do a play over there. And that was, I had a blast.
What play was that?
It's called Terrible Advice. And it was a comedy, and it was a four-hander. It was great. Over at the Chocolate Factory, a great little theater over there. And Frank Oz directed it. And
my God, what a gift that is.
Yeah, we had a ball. But anyway, Saul Rubinek wrote it. Great piece. But that was kind of like, that's my exit door is to the theater, I think. But now who knows what's going to happen in the theater. We think it's all going to come back. And
coming back, but it's proof of vaccination. And then a negative test. Yeah. I don't think it's and or. I think it's both. And it depends on the house. And I have friends going back. And I'm on tour. So I just...
Yeah, I know. That's good news.
I wear a mask before and after. Yeah. And unfortunately, I can't do meet and greets unless it's done properly. Because I can't get sick. I have too many people. But still, you're on a stage. Yeah. And if you're in a state that's not mask mandatory... it's a petri dish, maybe. I'm not a scientist. I don't know. And I'm also not a disbeliever in science. And I'm not angry. Right. So I can't get angry at people whether they wear one or not. But I would prefer, but I'm not putting it. Like some people are putting it, it's a hard line in their contract and won't play it. But there's not a lot of people that can demand that and actually have an audience. So it's interesting because theater for you would be, I'd be in New York to see it. I mean, you would. Oh my God, what a dream that would be.
It'd be, that's my first love. But, you know, we'll see. I was just thinking about, you know, how you guys always brought your tape recorders up in the olden days.
Yeah, now it's our phones. Tape recorders,
they put it on the stool. I said, now you should bring up a fan and just turn it, come out, plug it in, blow it that way. And just have a rotating fan. people would think that's hysterical, Bob.
Or maybe get a grill like Mad Max and just blow it constantly. It's repelling anything that comes toward your mouth, which I had to do when I was in gym.
Yeah.
God, it is a hard time. I'm so sorry Chelsea lost her mom, who I just loved, and she liked me. I remember that because she told me.
Yeah, she did. She was that kind of a woman. She loved everybody.
Chelsea's like that too. She's an angel.
She died. She was almost 96. She would have been 96 August 1st. So,
Well, I don't think there's an age limit anymore. I mean, yes, the body starts to do something after 100, but if you can do things right and you get the luck of the draw and don't mess it up, I'm thinking of 120 because I got too many people to take care of.
Right. And you also have enough jokes for that. You can get to 100. You got jokes at least to 120.
I just personally canceled half the things I say. I watched a special of mine accidentally, literally, because someone was watching it and I walked in and I was like, I said that? Was I nuts? Say that. And the answer is yes, I was nuts.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes, the world changes and you, every single thing you've done, did you ever play a horrible guy? I think you did as a guest. Yeah. You would be you were a murderer on a couple of those guest starring cop shows, right?
I did. I don't know that I was a murderer. I played a horrible guy when they were making movies of the week. I played a guy who was, you know, kidnapped a young teenage girl and took her out in the field and killed her. And it was about redemption. It was about the family coming to terms with me getting the death penalty. And it was Richard Thomas and Amy. Amy, she's married to Ed. Amy Matt. Oh my gosh.
I know. I did that before.
Ed, she's married to Ed Harris. You can cut this out. I know.
No, it's good. It's okay. This is normal. I mean, people aren't going to judge you for.
Anyway, so they were, but they were.
Oh,
they
you want to know the big joke here?
Yes.
Here we go. I couldn't remember. I got the privilege poster right here. So it was Carolyn McCormick played my wife. You know Carolyn?
No.
Or Linny?
And you had it right there.
It was literally. It's a teleprompter right there on my wall. The poster of the play.
But no, you know, look, you do the same stuff that I do. You do meaningful stuff, the movies that you've made and produced and directed and all the stuff that you've done. It's all you, kidding aside, you tackle stuff and you're not afraid to do stuff that matters to you. And that's good. So that stay working until 120.
Yeah.
We need you and keep people laughing and taking care of them out there too, Bobby. That's awesome. That's so sweet that you would do that with, you know, and just get on the phone with people and.
I'm going to do it again in a different form. It won't be the same as this podcast, I think.
Yeah.
But you have, you know, the same. You have so much to contribute because I would say, except for that horrible person that you played, which you learned from playing someone that horrific.
Oh, gosh, yeah. Yeah.
But you have a very special quality as a person that is so positive and brings us, that's why I called you a hero at the beginning. It brings you solace to know that someone cares and someone's trying to find answers. And that seems to be recurring in the shows that you've done that are the longest running. And it's quite a body of work. I mean, I didn't show you all my pages, but your IMDb is like the Gideon Bible. I mean,
I wrote a lot of that just yesterday, so it's probably.
I don't think so. Guys and Dolls at the Hollywood Bowl. I mean,
that was with Chelsea too. That was a ball. I've been lucky, but I've been very lucky. I've been very lucky, but you know, I like. We have something in this medium, and now with this medium, that. I mean, Belisario always used to say, don't try and make this show anything more than it's just entertainment. And there was so much inherent in Quantum Leap that, you know, walk a mile in somebody else's shoes.
Oh my God.
Start with that. Just look at the world through somebody else's eyes.
It's 101 in empathy.
Yeah. Yeah. But he didn't want to, you know, and he's the biggest, you know, soft, you know, biggest hearted guy around. He just doesn't want people to know about it because he's Italian. And you know, this is a powerful medium. It really is. It really is. And it gets abused a lot. And but But overall, still, I think there's a lot of really, really good work being done by a lot of wonderful people with, you know, with good intentions and that are using it to, you know, to further the human experience and educate and teach and get people to feel and confront their issues and give them outlets for their issues. And, you know, we're talking about stuff we never were able to talk about before.
Right. Even in the past 2 years, it's for some people, it's too much of the needle moving, but in retrospect, it won't be.
No.
Because it's much more inclusive. And there is something, if you think about the shows you binged, we stayed home. People were scared. We couldn't work. And Kelly and I, and when my kids were here, we just binged and loved the hell out of it because you're escaping into a world that somehow is so well crafted. And all of these British shows and shows from everywhere, all over the world. I mean, and documentaries and movies, of course. But television shows have grown into one long movie. In some cases.
So
I'd love to see you on a streamer that you're getting to just follow that story and somehow you're protected that it's not going to go away. Because, you know, some of them will go, well, it's not picked up. And then people fight like hell.
Yeah.
My friend Stamos just worked his ass off to get his second year of Big Shot on Disney.
Plus,
because they weren't sure, but the fans were there, and he really did what you do. You know, he fought to keep it alive because he loved it. And
a
great job doesn't come around that much when it's, and you've been very blessed, but you're the blessing, you know? You're kind of, you're pretty.
You're too kind.
I am too kind. But
Johnny won that. He won that battle, though. They're getting another season.
They picked it up. They picked up season two, and that was him and the network and Disney Plus standing behind him, and going, "You and a guy at the LA Times who wrote a love letter to him recently, which you know, people would always bash critics, but this is a person that analyzes television and said John's underrated and John's wonderful, and you know, he's a big influence in my life. Taught me a lot of stuff. So
Yeah, he's a good guy.
So did you. I want to see you. So we're going to...
Yeah, we'll do that.
I'll come over with two thermoses full of just coconut and lye. I've been drinking bleach. Now, tell me if that's... my poo is white.
Oh, that's a good sign.
Is it?
Yeah, it means you've been telling the truth a lot.
You know you're coming into money when your wife walks in and sees you doing it. I've never said that, nor will I again, but I just wish so much good for you. And no one deserves it.
I'm glad you have this podcast so we could at least have all this time together.
I know, it's so funny. My friend BJ Novak put out a tweet and said that, you know, it's so great to have a podcast where you can catch up with people you really care about or something like that. But I really do want to see you. I don't know what we're comfortable with. We'll figure it out. So,
we'll figure it out. Yeah, let's do it.
Give my love to everybody.
I will, and you too.
Yeah, I will. I will.
Please. All right, Bobby.
Thank you. I'll see you next time in person.
Appreciate it. Yes, please.
Thank you, Scott.
Thanks, bud.
Bye-bye.
Bye, Bobby.
Refill your thermos.
I'll try it. First, let me finish it.
Pee in one of them.
I do that. That's the third one. This one's over here.
Wow, holy crap.
Yeah. That's all pee.
Yeah.
I don't think that was your mail dinging. I think you're in a giant elevator and you just keep stopping at floors and you're sitting there with a computer. It's the size of your old apartment, this elevator.
We bought an old high rise and that's all I do all day now. I get in there with a bunch of drinks and I just go up and down all day.
you're the doorman. Well, I love you, Scott.
All right, I love you too, Bobby. Take care of yourself.
Scott Bakula, right? He is, he's a dear one. And, you know, when you know somebody that a lot of you I know like and feel familiar with because he's been in your living rooms, literally, he breaks and enters. But he is a really, really good man, and I love him very much. So I hope you enjoyed that, especially if you're fans of Quantum Leap or, you know, NCIS New Orleans, Nolans, Star Trek Enterprise, which is also based, it was a show on a rent-a-car. It was based on, all right, I can stop those. But he is such a good actor and such a dear, dear person, and incredibly real. And I'm lucky to have him in my life. And I hope you enjoyed listening to him or watching him on YouTube at the YouTube page, which is youtube.com/Bob Saget. And you know what you can do? You can rate, review, subscribe. You know, you can follow it if you're listening to it on, you know, Spotify. But if you subscribe or download, that would be, you know, apple.co/Bob Saget. I don't like saying slash Bob Saget. It sounds incredibly violent. But I'm so looking forward to seeing him. But also to the, I'm sure many of you that love Scott's work are looking forward to what the next piece will be that he does in the next chapter of Scott Bakula. Thank you guys for listening. Thank you for rating and reviewing and subscribing. But more importantly, just stay well and take care of yourself and take care of the people you love and your friends. And I'm not giving you a mission. You might be in need right now. And if you are, and this brought you any solace, I'm really honored by that. I'm really sorry if you guys are hurting. A lot of people are, and I am sometimes. And then I decide to take the clamp off of my groin. Just lost the 14-year-olds again. Anyway, wishing you guys well. I'm on tour. Go to bobsaget.com. I'm doing stand-up all over the country. I just added a date in Tampa, Florida. Yes, that's actually what I said. Tampa, Florida. And other places that exist all over this country. I'm looking forward to getting back to Canada. I want to go to Australia. I want to go to London. But right now, as you know, the world is, we just are going through a time. And so I'm wishing you all well, truly, by the way. And I'll see you next time or talk to you or hear you not. It's an interaction, so it's as though I hear you, but you know I can't because I'm not truly that telepathic. But I'm sending you guys a lot of good stuff and wishing you well. And stay well, everybody. Sending lots of love. Bye-bye.
Here's to getting back together, to planned lunches and unplanned cookouts, to grandma's recipes and smells that take us back, to passing down plates and traditions. Here's to warm embraces and familiar faces, to your best friends becoming best friends, to scheming, dreaming, and food still steaming. Here's to laughter and love, to growing closer than ever, for all of life's get-togethers. Chinette, here's to us.